welcome back to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben. I'm here with Kai.
Hello.
And we're going to, this is May 4th today.
May the 4th be with you.
You can't use that joke again. We already did that. We had several run-throughs to try to record this. And that joke keeps popping back up. So we're not going to do that joke. Nor are we going to do the joke about the Titanic carrying a lot of mayonnaise that was on its way to Mexico, and with the sinking of the Titanic and the loss of all that mayonnaise that was headed to Mexico, the Mexican people were so upset that they had a special day of recognition, which was the Cinco de Mayo. We're not going to do that.
No, absolutely
either.
Not.
No corny jokes. This is No Corny Jokes Wednesday on BadQuaker.com. Okay, so we were going to talk about intellectual property. As soon as I can pull up the right script here. Well, it's not really a script. It's more like notes that are...
The right script. That was cute. No puns either.
And no rhyming. Okay, so we're going to talk about intellectual property and how it actually interferes with the market and interferes with innovation and invention. I had teased a little bit of this in a previous podcast in reference to the aerospace industry, specifically in reference to the Wright brothers. And you can love them or you can hate them, is really not the point. Some people say, well, revisionist history goes in and it destroys heroes. Well, if the hero is based on myths and lies, then you need to examine why you call it a hero.
Yeah.
But the Wright brothers did great things. They were brave. They were intelligent. They were innovative. And but the problem was that they spent 10 years attempting to patent and then enforce the patent on a technology that didn't work.
Right.
I mean, they didn't actually patent the flying machine or the airplane. What they patented was the use of the what's called the flight surfaces or control surfaces on the wings. If you get in an airplane today, you sit down and you look out the window of the airplane, and you'll see what's commonly called the flaps. They're actually ailerons, but we commonly call them flaps, and they go up and down, and they control the way that the air goes across the wings, and they manipulate the way the airplane flies. The Wright brothers did not have that. They did not use that. What they did was they had a technology where they twisted the entire wing so that as they twisted the wing, they mocked the same function as what the flaps do in modern wings. Now, since their patent was on the way, it wasn't even on the method that they used. It wasn't on the twisting. Their patent was specifically in the concept of controlling the airflow over the wings. Well, that had already been shown. Flaps had already been invented about 50 years before that.
Right.
And there was a guy named Glenn Curtiss, who at the same time the Wright brothers are trying to make these goofy airplanes. Think about what the Wright Flyers looked like. Those weird-looking planes with that long part that stuck out in the front, and like a mini wing in the front, and then a big set of wings with a propeller pointed backwards and the engine behind them. And they're laying down on their bellies with their heads sticking out towards the front.
And the way that this is designed with the twisting of the wings, it can only be made of wood and cloth.
Yeah. You can't bring it into a modern airplane or aluminum, because you can't be bending any kind of metal like that. So you have to make it out of wood. It has to be super light. It has to be unstable. It has to be covered in canvas.
Which means it can't go very fast.
Exactly.
Can't hold a heavy engine.
Now, most people, when they talk about this battle between Glenn Curtiss and the Wright brothers, they're going to focus on, Glenn Curtiss was an engine expert, and his focus was with motorcycle engines, and he was trying to use propulsion to get an airplane that would be able to fly itself. Whereas the Wright brothers were using this modern technology. But that's just a lie. That's all that is. That's just a lie. Yes, Curtiss was... people have said that he was one of the best engine mechanics of his day, best engine designers of his day. The Wright brothers had an engine designer that worked for them in their shop. And he gets almost no credit for actually designing and building the engine that the Wright brothers used. And in 1903, when the Wright brothers actually... made their first flight, they then didn't fly anymore for years. They had quiet little hidden flights that nobody saw or anything because their plane was so underpowered that it couldn't really do much. They could fly down there at Kitty Hawk where they had the perfect atmospheric conditions and the perfect wind and everything was just exactly right, but they couldn't duplicate that in Dayton, Ohio, where they lived.
And to be honest, their flight was really much less of a flight and more like gliding anyway.
It really was.
They had to start out at the top of the hill.
With a catapult.
Yeah, and go down the hill and try to maintain, you know, it was not what you think of now as a flight.
Right. Now, so for years, they wouldn't allow anybody to see them fly again. They attempted to sell their airplane to numerous governments around the world, but under the condition that the government buy the plane without a demonstration. And the governments weren't going to do that.
Right.
So the Wright brothers couldn't sell their invention. They wouldn't demonstrate their invention. All they would do is aggressively pursue the patent, keeping anybody else from making one. And that was the problem with Glenn Curtiss. Glenn Curtiss was designing and flying airplanes that had flaps. And the Wright brothers were attacking him because he was controlling the flow of the air over the wings, and they had the patent on that.
Right.
And his argument was, look, I'm not twisting the wings to do this. I'm using the aileron. And they didn't care. They said, well, our patent covers that. So for 10 years... the Wright brothers kept aviation in the United States from advancing forward, while countries like Brazil had flyable airplanes. New Zealand had a flyable airplane. France, Italy, Germany, England, they were all advancing, developing flyable airplanes that used the aileron.
Yep.
And here the United States is stuck with this goofy twisting wings
That barely flies, and you
extremely
can't,
unstable.
You can't do anything with it. You know, you can't achieve any usage for that plane.
There were so many deaths with Wright Brothers planes that in 1913, a government investigation labeled the Wright C Flyer, which was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think it was sixth generation Wright plane. Because I think they had like the first Wright Flyer and then the Wright Flyer 2. Anyway, I think the C was the sixth generation Wright plane.
For all you young kids, that would be 6G.
Anyway, by 1913, the government, the wording they used was dramatically unsuitable for flying. And so the government entirely rejected 10 years of work that the Wright brothers had put. And they accepted the Curtiss design because the Wright brothers' design didn't work. And yet, they held the patent. And the government backed up the Wright brothers' patent that whole time. And that's what intellectual property laws do. They create advantages for one company at the expense of the market.
And they prevent the company that holds the patent from having any interest in improving their design.
Right. There's no motivation to switch and take on somebody else's design because they're so invested in their one technology that they hold the patent on that they're just won't. Well, an example of that is with General Electric and Westinghouse. That's a famous situation where General Electric under Edison. Hey, that guy's name always pops out of my head right when I start to say it. But Edison had done all these wonderful inventions with electricity, all using direct current, DC current.
Mm-hmm.
And Westinghouse, with the brilliant designer and inventor Tesla, Tesla shows, hey, look, you can do everything with alternating current, and it's much more efficient. You get a lot more power out of it.
And it's safer.
It's safer, and it has all these dramatic advantages. But Edison didn't hold the patent on, or the copyright, on alternating current. It was an opposing technology to his direct current. And so Edison was so invested in his one technology that he refused to adapt to the market change.
Mm-hmm.
And it literally, the battle between those two went on for years, between Westinghouse and Edison over
which
this.
Just stifled the market.
Yeah.
Because you have to, without intellectual property, what you have is a situation where it's a constant race to see who can come up with the next best thing.
Right.
You know, if you design this one product and then your competitor modifies it to be better, then you have to go modify that to be better.
Right.
And it brings the human race and it brings technology forward.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with patents and copyrights and intellectual property, it stifles all of that. It makes it to where you cannot, you have no reason to innovate.
Yeah.
All you have,
the motivation is gone,
is this desire to come up with something and then lock it down in patents.
Yeah. We can see that pretty obviously today in the market as far as software goes and the battles that Microsoft has gone. You know, if Microsoft had spent less time suing people and fighting to control their copyrights of their different intellectual property, if they had spent less effort doing that and more effort actually making their product better,
yep,
then, you know, maybe we wouldn't have such buggy products coming out of Microsoft that need updated so often and that won't work for the first two or three years that they're released.
Exactly. Well, and the other issue that brings about is there's an issue of who owns the product. You know, you have the intellectual propertyists, mm-hmm, who say that the person who designs the product owns the product. And
right,
then you have the property rights people who say, if I buy something from you, I own it.
Right.
You know, you see this with the jailbreaking of the iPhones.
Yeah.
Okay, Apple owns that technology, mm-hmm, but if I shell out the money for an iPhone, it's my iPhone, and I ought to be able to do with it what I want.
Right.
You know, because I own it now. I've paid you for it. You, mm-hmm, don't own it anymore.
Right. They have this odd way of thinking where even though you've purchased something from them, they still own it.
Yeah.
How would that work with anything else in the market?
Exactly.
If I sold you an Apple, I mean, not an Apple computer, but an actual, you know, I started to say Macintosh. That won't work either. Granny Smith. A banana. There we go. But if I sell you a piece of fruit, and you start to take a bite of it, and I'm like, hey, wait, you can't do that. You can't crack the surface. You can't see what's inside.
Right.
Why not? I own it.
Right.
You know, it's a ridiculous argument.
Right, exactly.
How can I buy it and not own it? And if I own it, how can I be limited as to what I can do with it?
Exactly.
It's like, imagine, you know, the whole IP argument is I can't remember if it was... I can't remember who I heard first use this example, but if I have a match and it has upon it fire, this is a technology.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a little stick there and you say, hey, I would like some of that fire, and you take your stick and you bring it over here and we put the two together, and now you have fire and I have fire. I haven't lost anything.
Yep.
We have shared a technology. You have your own.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much this. How can I then tell you, wait, don't take that fire and light that other wood with it.
Right.
I own the intellectual property of that fire.
Right.
You know, well, how can that be?
I'll share it to you, but you can't share it with anybody else. Everybody else has to get it directly from me.
Yeah, that's goofy.
If, you know,
if that were the case, if natural, without going into a whole thing on natural law, clearly that is not a natural setting.
Right.
Because a natural setting would say, well, I own the fire now.
Yeah.
You have your fire. I have my fire. That's natural. So yep, it's a natural law. So natural law is not a hard thing to figure out then. It's the obvious.
Yeah.
And if what we're doing is exactly the opposite of the obvious, it's unnatural.
Yes.
Unnatural should generally be avoided.
Yeah.
That's like in the leap to the music industry. There's a smooth transition for you. You know, there was a time when somebody like, let me look up real quick. Stephen Foster. Stephen Foster was the songwriter back in the 1800s. And he was very prolific. And he wrote like Old Susanna, Camp Town Races, My Old Kentucky Home, Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, Beautiful Dreamer. He just was putting out. He was the music machine of the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And he made his living primarily by writing this stuff and then selling the copies of it. Sheet music.
He
made his living selling sheet music. And then that music would go out to, you know, entertainers all around the country, and they would buy sheet music, and then they would take it, and then they would go perform it.
Right.
Now, this was before, there was some intellectual property laws, of course, there was copyrights and patents at the time, but the state hadn't grown to the point of where it was dominating industries like it is now.
Right.
So somebody in Cleveland might buy a copy of a Stephen Foster song, and they play it, and they entertain a crowd with it, and somebody in the crowd hears that, and they go home, and they say, listen, here's a new song I just heard, and they play it in their parlor on their piano. Were any rights violated by that?
No.
See, of course not. That's ridiculous. Why would you think that? And yet... and then let's take this into modern days. Let's say somebody writes a song, and they record that song, and they go on the radio, and they play that song, and you hear that song, and you're like, oh, I like that. That's a good song. And you go home, and you figure out how to play that song yourself, and you perform that song. What have you stolen?
Nothing.
You haven't stolen anything. You haven't taken... That person still has their song.
Right.
What if you perform that song and get paid for it? Well, you're still doing... In a natural setting here, you're not taking anything away from that other person.
Right.
You say, well, but you stole the idea of the song. How can you steal an idea?
Yeah.
If I have a thought, and I express that thought to you, and then you say, hey, that's pretty cool, and then you say it, should I then chase you down and force you to give me money because...
Right.
Because of my thought?
Right. Well, it's an issue that the government the state is deeply interested in, because what happens is if people are free to share information and share ideas and share all of these intellectual properties, then the government doesn't have its hand in it. You know, the government right now, as it stands, has an extremely vested interest in the music industry, the television industry, the movie industry, because it's highly regulated.
Right. And those giant corporations that want the government to regulate them work hand in hand with the government to maintain their massive monopolies in each of those industries. And you think, well, oh, there's no monopoly in the. Let's say, just for instance, let's say the music industry. There's no monopoly in the music industry, right? Well, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
And there has been for years. I mean, there it's not monopoly in the sense that there's only one company, but there's one very small group of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to have a recording and you're going to have it publicized and you're going to make, you know, a person who's really going to be a big star, they have to come out of one of these state-authorized massive corporations.
Yep.
And those corporations want the state to have all these regulations and intellectual property rules and everything else. So the corporation exists because the state has all these laws that restrict entry into the market.
Yep.
And the corporations can only exist if the state keeps all these laws in place and regulates so heavily that no one else can enter the market. Yep. And then in return, these corporations provide massive amounts of funding for specific candidates, and they lend all of their influence in the, you know, mass media, through the, you know, marketing and everything else that the corporations do to keep the state propped up and functioning against the what would actually be you know, better for all the rest of us who are not the state or the corporations.
Right, because you look at what is better for the individual people. And what is better for civilization as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
What is better for the individual music executive is for you to not be able to record whatever you want and put it out to a public.
Right.
They don't want that.
Right.
Because that undermines their authority.
Right.
But it's better for civilization as a whole because you don't have people's thoughts and ideas being stifled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can suddenly, you know, discover music that you like.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good example. If you think about how things were, you just pick a time in history, 1955, 1965, 1975, 1985, 1995. At any moment in history through there, if you were going to say, you know, I'm tired of the music. I wonder what new music is being played. So you kick on the radio,
mm-hmm.
and you listen to the radio for a little bit, and you were given a choice of music that was all authorized.
Mm-hmm.
It had all gone through this process, and it was all coming from the same tiny group of people, the same tiny group of corporations. It was being distributed through a very small group of communication corporations, and the offering that you were being given was a very select thing. And it all, you know, you had a specific rock sound or a mm-hmm. specific country sound or a specific, and everything was being fed to you exactly the way these corporations wanted it.
And from a paranoid anarchist standpoint, you know, there's a specific group of people who are drawn towards anti-statist mentality, anti-authoritarian mm-hmm. mentality. And so what happens is you get, and I'm going to pick on them because they irritate me so very much,
mm-hmm.
you get people like the Sex Pistols
mm-hmm.
and that whole punk movement
yeah.
where you have this state-sponsored record company going, ooh, we need to take advantage of these group of people who are anti-authority, and so we're going to give them a false rebellion sound
yeah.
that doesn't achieve anything and that keeps them from discovering these ideas that will actually be harmful to us.
Right.
You know, instead we're going to spoon-feed them this false
mm-hmm.
rebellion.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I pick on that because that's a particular pet peeve, but...
Well, you could use Metallica as that
exactly.
example. Or the entire grunge movement.
Yeah.
You know, the grunge movement was happening regionally. It was purely a regional movement. It was very raw, and it was really, really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the corporations swept in, dumped money in everybody's pocket, and just purchased it.
Yep.
And then made out of it what they wanted to.
And so what right now what you have is you have a group of people who the state is deeming as pirates and bootleggers and these evil people, these evil hacker anarchists who are distributing information and ideas and music and movies and television shows through a medium that is not controllable,
mm-hmm.
Not state-sponsored, mm-hmm. and you can't regulate them.
Yeah.
This is true anarchy. This is the free market, and it is entirely productive for the human race.
A general rule is if you see a group of people that are being labeled negatively, like oh, they're pirates, or oh, it's a black market. Oh, watch out, it's a black market. Or what's the other one you said? Oh, bootleggers. Ooh, watch out for the evil bootleggers. But all these things have a tendency to make one realize that whenever you start labeling people like that, there's probably some reason you need to take a look at it and see why you're being told that they're bad.
Right.
Because they're probably just free market trying, or a market trying to find a free spot.
Yep.
And I don't mean free as in no cost. I'm saying free as in unrestricted and unfettered by the government.
Right.
Allowed free like a bird is free, and not free like a pet is free when someone just hands it to you and says, here, have a pet.
Yeah, and it creates an interesting marketplace, because as it stands right now, I can go for free, or I can choose to pay, and I can get music from rock stars in the Philippines.
Yeah.
I can get music that a group of people recorded in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
That might be way better music than anything the music industry is putting out.
Yeah.
Because it's not regulated.
Right.
You know, and regulation always produces an inferior product. And the free market will always produce a better product.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you take iTunes, if I like a band and I go and buy that band's songs,
mm-hmm.
They have to keep producing good songs, otherwise I'm not going to buy them.
Right.
You know, if you have five or six bands that are in this genre, and those are your only options,
mm-hmm.
you kind of got to buy them.
Yeah.
Even if they're terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's, I don't really know how the bulk of humanity doesn't look at things like this and realize the false, front that the state has put up with things like intellectual property. It seems so obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew back when the MP3 sharing thing was really taking off back in the late 90s and in that range. It just seemed so clear and honest to me.
Yep.
And when they started suing little old ladies because their granddaughter, you know, downloaded a Backstreet Boys song or something like this, and some little old lady in Phoenix or something is getting hit with a $250,000 fine because her granddaughter, you know, downloaded a Backstreet Boys song. That kind of stuff, it was so clearly wrong.
Yep.
And yet that's the side the government takes.
Yep.
And that should just, red flags should go off across the whole nation, and people saying, you know, this is not right. This is not America. This is not what we stand for. This is not what our forefathers fought for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is what we have.
Yep. And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Because now that the state has foolishly allowed a small little glimpse of a free market, and people are beginning to go, wait, what is that? Then they're going to crack down so hard, you know?
Sometimes I imagine the state is Homer Simpson, you know, like here the internet's starting to grow and the state's ignoring it and ignoring it and ignoring it. And then all of a sudden it dawns on the state and the state's like, no! Oh, well. Well, we've beat up the state over intellectual property rights now for probably long enough.
Yeah, I'm sure we could continue to rant and rave about that for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for listening to our podcast and our ranting, and be sure and tune in next week. We try to put out a podcast every Wednesday afternoon. So until next Wednesday, be sure and leave us some feedback, even if you didn't like us or if you did like us. Thank you very much for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast.